This week, we talked about that day and some other things with the man who replaced and later pardoned Mr. Nixon, Gerald Ford. Mr. Ford still feels the pardon was the best thing for the country, but concedes now it might have been one of the things that cost him the election in 1976. Even so, he seems to look back with compassion on the man who announced his own departure the night before Mr. Ford was sworn in.
I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body. But as president, I must put the interests of America first. America needs a full-time president and a full-time Congress, particularly at this time with problems we face at home and abroad. To continue to fight through the months ahead for my personal vindication would almost totally absorb the time and attention of both the President and the Congress in a period when our entire focus should be on the great issues of peace abroad and prosperity without inflation at home. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
How did you first get the word that you were about to become president?
Well, the previous day, I had been asked by Al Haig to come in. He said that President Nixon wanted to meet with me. He didn't categorically tell me that President Nixon had made his decision, but certainly the possibility, the strong possibility existed. As I recall, it was 11 o'clock, and I went into the outer office of the Oval Office, and then was ushered in and sat down with then President Nixon, and he told me of his plans. We had a very nice conversation. It was very difficult, of course, because President Nixon had been an old friend of mine, and I was very saddened by the turn of events, even though I knew that mistakes had been made and the time had come, obviously, for him to make that decision.
Well, you know, I suppose we'll all remember that day when President Nixon left the red carpet out to the helicopter. That must have been, while I'm sure you were very, very happy to suddenly realize you were President of the United States, it must have been a very difficult time as well.
That was a long walk, Bob, from the entrance of the White House down to the helicopter. Betty and I walked along with President Nixon and Pat. There wasn't much you could say. An old friend and a wonderful wife, leaving under those circumstances, we did the best we could to carry on the conversation, but believe me, it wasn't easy.
So then you realized you had to be president. As you walked back, as you saw Mr. Nixon leave, did you say to yourself, there are certain things that I must do first here?
Well, the first obligation was to walk into the East Room and take the oath of office and to make some observations and remarks as to what I would try to do at the very beginning as President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over. Our Constitution works. Our great republic is a government of laws and not of men. Here, the people rule. But there is a higher power. By whatever name, we honor him, who ordains not only righteousness, but love. Not only justice, but mercy.
Was that your favorite speech?
I think so, Bob. It was drafted by one of my very dear friends in my staff, Bob Hartman, who knew the tone and knew the substance that I wanted, and he and I worked on it. I think it was short, to the point, and it certainly reflected the mood that I felt and the needs for the country under that very difficult transition.
Shortly after you left office, you said you thought the country was in good shape at home and abroad. Do you still feel that way?
I certainly do, Bob. The day that we turned the reins of government over to President Carter, we had reduced the rate of inflation to 4.8% from over 12% the day I took office. We had unemployment going down and employment going up. But the most important thing that I at least was happy about was the fact that the healing process had taken place. The American people had faith in their government. They had faith in most of their public officials, whether they agreed with me or not. We were a much happier nation and were optimistic about the future. And that, to me, was the critical achievement of my administration.
Let me ask you about the institution of the presidency. You served less than 4 years. The man before you had to resign. The man before him, in effect, was forced out of office, President Johnson, because of Vietnam, and then, of course, there was the assassination. The presidency seems to chew men up these days. Do you think we'll ever have another two-term president?
I hope so. I think some continuity over an eight-year period is desirable for this country. I would hope that the next president would have programs, both domestic and international, which would be supported by the American people for another four-year term. That kind of continuity, in my opinion, is highly beneficial for the growth, the leadership of the United States in this complicated world in which we live. To have a change every 4 years or a shorter period of time, in my opinion, results in a disjointed program.
Well, President Carter talks about a crisis of confidence in the country, some sort of a loss of spirit in the country. Do you sense that?
I find now, as I travel around the country, some growing discontent. It's different, obviously, than under Watergate or Vietnam. There is a feeling in the American people that our policies have not been able to meet the challenges, whether it's energy, the economy. And the net result is there is this apprehension. I wouldn't say it was disillusionment. There needs to be some spark that will restore the old "we're going to do it" American attitude.
I want to ask you about some politics. You said
I'm not a politician anymore, Bob.
All right. But you still speak with some authority in that field, I'm sure. You said from the beginning, from the time you left the White House, that you did not intend to enter any primaries in 1980. Is that still your position?
That's my position today, and it hasn't changed from the very beginning.
Well, what I never understood is why.
Putting myself in primaries with other candidates, in my opinion, is the wrong position for a former president to take. My record is known. I was there 2.5 years, plus vice president, plus member of Congress. I don't have to prove myself either as to the past or while I was president.
Mr. President, I take it that you would be available should the Republican Party turn to you and ask you at the convention to be their nominee.
Betty and I have never ducked any responsibility. We have a very deep conviction about our responsibilities to the country. If the circumstances developed, obviously we would not back off. We would be available. I add very quickly, however, Bob, I do not foresee a scenario that would develop in that way. It's a possibility, but it's quite remote.
When I observed you when I was covering the White House, it seemed to me that you really enjoyed being president. Is that right?
You're precisely right, Bob. I enjoyed walking into the Oval Office every day, even though I knew that we had serious problems at home and abroad. The challenges sort of stimulated me mentally as well as physically. There's no challenge, Bob, like the White House and being president of the United States. So anybody that is in good health, and I've never been in better health, can't help but say, gee, if the opportunity's there, it would not be an unhappy experience.
Thank you, Mr. President.